All right.
All right. Sorry about being late. Thanks for waiting. I guess we can call the meeting to order, 6:07. If you haven't done that already.
We'll take minutes.
All right. So we're here to discuss the potential construction projects to include building 23 and the gym, I believe. And Ricardo sent out some slides to everybody. I'm hoping everybody had a chance to take at least a look at them.
Guys, let's do the Pledge of Allegiance so you can hold order, please.
Do the Pledge of Allegiance, absolutely. All right. The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag.
To the flag.
United States of America and to the Republic.
It stands
one nation under God, indivisible, liberty and justice for all.
You know, the State Board of Education and the CSAC does not do the Pledge of Allegiance at the start of their meetings, I noticed. That's okay. So first up on the agenda, I guess, Ricardo, are you going to kind of walk us through the briefing?
Yes. Tiffany and I will walk you through the eight or nine slides that we, the eight slides that we have. And, you know, and then we can, the last slide is really going to be opening up for conversation and we can address any questions, you know, comments, concerns, issues, and, you know, and hopefully we, you know, the board will make a, make a decision, you know, either, ratify the recommendation or processing it come to a, you know, and its own decision.
Okay, so I know some people are new. I guess you're going to walk everybody quickly through the process, what we're trying to do here, what the outcomes are. Okay.
Yep.
Do you need to share the screen?
Absolutely.
Can you
I guess yes, I can share, I can share the screen. Hold on a minute.
So if everyone doesn't have it, Ricardo, I guess you sent a PDF, and you also sent a Excel spreadsheet along with that as well.
Yes, but that is, I'm probably not going to share that because the print will be so small. And that is, you know, there is a summary of that, detail slide included in the deck.
Okay.
So, once again, thank you everybody for this opportunity to engage the full board this time around for a discussion around the next steps with regards to the construction projects that we've teed up and have been discussing for a while. I do want to thank both the formal facilities committee members and the ad hoc members that have assisted and supported us. If we look at the process that we embarked on, we're looking at two projects. And as part of our continuous improvement journey, we decided that given the complexity of especially the large gym, which is a new construction project to date, everything we have done was primarily retrofitting projects, the buildings, and then we had the small gym addition, which was actually a new structure between buildings 21 and 22. At the right after the April board meeting, we launched an RFP to a select group of vendors, and you have the list in the appendix. We had a mandatory pre-bid meeting, which nine vendors replied to, and you have the list of those nine. On May 6th, after answering questions, we received five construction management proposals, and basically today we're focusing on these five vendors. As you see in the slides, because we have not finalized the decision quite yet, we have chosen to identify these five vendors by letters in the alphabet. And please you know, be aware that the letters do not follow the alphabetical order in which the five vendors are presented in this slide. On May 19th, we had a first presentation to the executive committee. There were some questions that were raised, and so the committee went offline again. We delayed the presentation from last week, and are, you know, now that we've collected all the information, we're at the meeting today to present the findings and the recommendations to the full board for a decision and a path forward. So what we have been discussing are two projects, and I'm just going to take a little time here, especially for our new board members. The two projects are the finishing the retrofit of Building 23, which we're calling Phase 2B. Phase 2A was done last summer, which included about 12,000 square feet also, with four fully loaded science labs, and then additional classrooms on the first floor. And then there's the new gymnasium, which was part of the original design of the campus. And in 2018, we lost our capability to pursue aggressively fundraising for different reasons, president turnover, the school was put on formal review, dampening our capability to reach out to foundations and larger supporters that would be needed for the gym, for the large gym. We postponed the implementation or the launch of the large gym. We're looking at two projects that in total at this point in time with the current estimates, we're looking at anywhere from $3 to $4 million. Building 23 is estimated in the $400,000 to $450,000 range, and the new gymnasium is in the $3 million to $3.2 million range, according to current estimates. We explored two paths or two possibilities, and in terms of hiring a construction manager or a general contractor. And at the time, at the April board meeting, we did land on the construction manager route. And the driver there is primarily because of the large gym and that there is quite a bit of pre-construction design work that still needs to be completed on the large gym. And that is a functionality that usually a general contractor does not get engaged in. And so in light of that effort and in light of this being totally new construction, we also thought that having a construction manager who comes in more as a partner than just a contractor that is there to execute and primarily focus on cost management and the timely delivery of a project, we thought that the school could benefit given the scale of the project and it being a new project, benefit from the partnering mindset that a construction manager brings to the table. So we kept playing around with these two because Building 23 is a little more shovel ready than the new gymnasium. Just like phase one of Building 23, it was more shovel ready. And so we ended up in a position closer to a general contractor than a construction management position. Once we started diving into the information that was provided, the committee developed selection criteria, and they go from experience to cost to fees, to cost management, to value engineering, and to additional resources that the different vendors and the different potential partners bring to the table. As you see, we came to a consensus as a committee that we put a weight of 55% on construction management experience and experience with similar type projects, AKA gyms, you know, large gyms per se. And then we looked at 45% on the cost side, the value engineering, and what other bells and whistles the different firms had to offer us, you know, as part of the experience that they, the broader construction management experience that they bring. The evaluation key that we used was a 1 to 5 from strength to weakness. So the low scores were the, you know, were the preferable scores in terms of finalizing a selection of finalists and then a recommended candidate. In part, you know, to help frame the assessment process, we have a continuum from cost, which tends to be the GC approach, primarily to overall value, where you have costs, but you have the bells and whistles. And of course, between the two, as we move from one side of the scale to the other, the question is always one of the added costs of having a construction manager, you know, working, and even within construction managers, the different proposals. You know, we wrestled with what is an acceptable premium to pay for the added services and added supports that players would offer to the school. And so we wrestled with a threshold, and we will talk a little more about that. We also discussed about, you know, discussed the possibility of splitting the contract between construction managers, one that might be focused on building 23, which is more shorter term, more shovel ready, and where cost could play more of a role, and, you know, one that might be more complete and value driven in its experience and offer a more complete package to Odyssey, as we focused on implementing the construction of the gym. So this is a summary of the spreadsheet that you all received. And the first comment that I want to make here is that of the five bidders, one provided just a lump sum bidder, happens to be the low bidder, happens also to be the vendor that offered the shortest timeline. The group discussed this at length, and you know, the group decided that this was really an outlier and that costs would be more in the range of what was presented by the other four vendors. And so for this analysis, although we rated the vendor and everything, we basically excluded this vendor from you know, from the final assignment of the decision that the committee made. You know, so we've narrowed it down to A, B, C, and E for consideration and assignment of the one contract, or should we be splitting it into two contracts? And so E becomes the low cost vendor. And so there, when you see the difference to the lowest bidder, you see the relative comparison between the players. And so you see a variance of up to $38,000 on the building 23 versus vendor E. And the same analysis being done on the gym, both for pre-construction and construction project staffing, and then a total staffing cost, right? There was one vendor that should they be the winner and assigned the whole project, they would have given us a discount on the pre-construction work. And that's why you see two numbers for them at 332 and at 311. You know, once again, for comparison purposes, should we go with that with that firm, then for both projects, then you know, their all-in cost would drop. So, you know, and so we see here the spread anywhere from about $240,000 all the way up to $312,000. Of course, this is over and above the actual construction costs on which the construction management company would apply its CM fee. The CM fees varied between 1.5% on the low end and 4% on the high end. We had one vendor also that gave us two different percentages, 4% on the smaller project and 3% on the larger project. So as we looked at these numbers, as the committee looked at these numbers, we wrestled with, once again, the discussion of the value proposition and the deltas, right, between the value proposition. So we see that there is a modest delta in the pre-construction in building 23, which is shovel ready, and there is a similar type, slightly bigger delta on the gym addition. So in this discussion, we felt that yes, there is a premium that is worth paying on the large gym for additional value add service experience, be it, as we said, with similar type projects, with vendors, additional vendors and subcontractors that we might be using, and services that these vendors could offer Odyssey in support of the large gym completion. And so with that in mind, and the fact that we have two projects that are relatively different, and we did have a price differential between them, and in light of the fact that our budget is currently very tight in and of itself, and that we are at the front end of fundraising, capital fundraising for for the two projects, the recommendation that the team has come up with is that we de facto split the two GMPs with two contractors. Contractor E would be assigned building 23, having been the low cost, and the staffing costs that they propose are very similar to the staffing costs that we incurred for project staffing costs, construction project staffing costs that we incurred for phase 2A last year. You know, so we felt that they were in line for the magnitude of a 10,000-12,000 square foot retrofit. And the large gym, we're recommended that it be assigned to vendor A, and there is a $31,000 premium between the two vendors, the low-cost vendor and vendor E and vendor A on the large gym. And we as a group felt that that premium was worth the investment, given what this vendor brings in terms of added value to the partnering relationship that we would have with them as we pursue the large gym. So, of course, in addition to the final decision of whether we go with one contractor or two contractors for these projects, and managing two construction management companies with a broken timeline makes it a little easier than having two construction management firms concurrently on premises. So in addition to that decision, you know, we do need to circle back and align our thinking around the project funding. I mean, we've talked about many, you know, several different sources of funding, but we have not discussed on how they would be allocated to the projects. And that would bring us to the prioritization of the two projects. 6 months ago, we were talking about the possibility of running with them concurrently. Right now, it makes potentially more sense to line them up sequentially. That gives us an opportunity to do fundraising for the larger project. And in that, given the budget constraints that we are facing right now, not knowing where the state is coming out with its funding, and the additional capital funding that we have been discussing in terms of release from the maintenance repair fund, and also the conversations that we've been having with the investors in releasing the last tranche of the Longwood $1.4 million, the last $400,000 that was supposedly dedicated to funding capital expenditures, we do have to process launch dates. With regards to the launch dates, if we want to start the school year with a completed Building 23, and assuming that we open school normally on time at the end of August and we have a full opening, the launch date of the Building 23 retrofit should not pass mid-June. So we would have to start working in mid-June, which means that we would have to start pursuing the obtaining of the permits as soon as possible. If school comes back on a modified structure, or if the school starts in the fall still on a remote learning basis, we do get some additional respite on the front end, in the sense of not having to start by mid-June the Building 23 project. Tiffany? I know I've gone through the presentation. Would you like to add some color to it at this point in time?
Well, you know, Ricardo, I think that you covered everything really well. The slides really give a good explanation of how we got to the recommendation. It's important to remember that while we're talking about costs, we're not talking about the sticks and bricks. We're merely talking about the cost of the team to manage the project. It's construction, staffing costs, pre-construction costs. So while, it is important to understand what upfront costs we'll need and what we're going to pay this team to do to manage the project, it's also important to remember that the big picture is our overall budget will be what it is, no matter which contractor is selected. And that's part of using the contract that we've selected for the contract, which is the guaranteed maximum price that the contractor would be working under.
And one more comment that I would like to add in terms of the value of having a construction management firm, that they can help us in the pre-construction phase on planning. That helps reduce and eventually hopefully minimize the incurrence of owner-mandated change orders, because usually those are over and beyond the GMP that is agreed to between the parties. So minimizing the risk to having owner-mandated change orders with solid planning up front will ensure the likelihood of success in terms of meeting the agreed-upon GMP. And with that, I would like to open it up to questions, comments from members of the board.
So this is Rodrigo. I have a question. I think to Tiffany's point, if you go to slide 6, so obviously you're just showing a piece of the overall budget, Ricardo. You mentioned something like $300,000 to $400,000, right, for building 23?
Yeah, about around $400,000 to $450,000.
Okay, so this $30,000 to $40,000 or actually no, this is just the difference. Actually 43 to 80 would be included in that $400,000 to $450,000.
Yes.
It would be good to have understand that total picture. So you have this component here, which is the GC or GM or however you're calling the CM cost. And then what else is everything else just materials, or is there other contractors that are involved? Same thing for GM. I mean, you're talking about $3 million, right? And we're looking only at $200,000 to $300,000. So where's the other components? And I looked at the slide on the back, talks about timeline for the GM, and it mentions sometime early next year for phase one. So again, is there a two-step process or two-phase construction or more than one-phase construction? And is that $3 million cover everything? Or if it beginning of next year's phase one, when are the next phases and when is the whole building complete? That came to mind.
So let me take the latter part of your question, and then I'll have Tiffany jump in on the former part of your question with regards to the total cost. With regards to timing, Building 23, of course, is ideally a summer project so that the high school can open with its full capacity. The original timeline for the gym, we were given the magnitude of the fundraising effort for the gym, the 3.3, we could not commit to launching the full gym. And so we broke it into two phases. Phase one was basically doing all the site work and then the erection of the gym structure so that it would be covered, you know, and safe. We wouldn't have rain coming in, etc. That is estimated at about $1.3 to $1.4 million to get to that point. And that's already a big chunk of change. At a previous board meeting, we spoke about this 1.3, 1.4, plus the 400,000. So it would require about $1.7 million to get through the end of phase one. And phase one, from a timeline, assuming that we would be starting in July, would end in February. And so in the original timeline that was presented in the appendix, we were hoping to have made the decision of a CM at the middle of May. And so between the middle of May and early June, the CM would be given the opportunity to go out and bid the work so that they could come back with a proposed GMP, a guaranteed maximum price for the building 23. And because there is still design work that would be that was still necessary to be done on the large gym, we had pushed back the window of time for the construction manager to present a GMP for the large gym. And that deadline was pushed back in the original timeline to mid-July. And the start would be in that time frame, late July, early August, and would end phase one in February. Tiffany?
So about, yeah, so just before Tiffany, just to, so you said 8 to 9 months, if my math is correct, in terms of phase one for GM. How long for phase two?
I think, in months? Tiffany, 3-4 months.
Yeah, I mean, we're looking at a total build for the gym of 6 months, most likely. You know, each contractor is looking at it a little bit differently and presenting a little bit of a different duration. So, but we're looking at about a 6 month build in total. And if we break it into two phases, it would probably be about 3 and 3, 3 months for phase one and 3 months for phase two. But, you know, as we start working through finishing the design, well, let me, I think that I can answer it and answer the other question at the same time. When we work with a construction manager, we'll award the project to them before the design is complete. We'll work with the construction manager in the pre-construction phase, which is everything leading up to breaking ground. And they'll help us while we're finishing our design. They'll help us work with the architects to come up with, you know, very like our most cost-effective ways of doing, of building things, cost-effective materials and methods. And then once the design is complete, they'll take the drawings to the county for permits. They'll take the drawings and put them out on the street for subcontractor award. So then that's when, you know, when we get those bids back from the subcontracting community, then we understand what the total cost of the design that we've issued will be. During that pre-construction phase, they'll do estimates to make sure we're right about where we want to be. Our budget's already going to be set at that point. So we have to design within the budget. So while they're doing that, they're developing their total cost and their project schedule. So we'll have a much better idea once the design is complete what the project schedule is going to be. But from previous experience with some of these contractors have had building similar gyms, we're looking at approximately a 6 month build. And if we break it into phases, we'll look at the core and shell, we'll call it, which is the structure, so you'll see what it looks like, you know, it'll be built. That's about 3 months. And then the fit out, we call the rest of it, will be when they do all the stuff inside that you can't see until you go inside. That should be in about another 3 months. Hopefully that answers kind of all your questions.
Yeah.
There. And
so that's phase two, right? The interior is phase two, so that's another 3 months. So if you're in the timeline that I saw on this slide in the back, it goes from February phase one, so you add another 3 months for phase two and you're done. Basically by summer next year, if we were to follow the current timing.
Yep.
And on the pricing table, I think you mentioned something, Ricardo, that, you know, in addition to what they show, or, you know, they also charge a percent on the cost of the subs, right? Did you highlight here where the percent are?
Well, no, I did not highlight the percentages because in the pricing formula for this part of the bid, those percentages are embedded in these costs already. Okay, and the personnel cost, the hourly rates are fully loaded. Okay.
Rodrigo, I think you had another question that wasn't answered, and that the fee comes into play there. So the total contract value for the contractor is the construction staffing, the pre-construction, the sticks and bricks, we'll call it, that's the materials, manpower, to actually do the construction, and then they have what they consider soft costs, general conditions and general requirements that'll be reimbursable costs of the work that isn't, you know, the actual materials going into place. And then once all of those are decided upon, the fee is the total, they'll take their total, their fee and take the total, and their fee is like 2.9% of the total cost of construction. Or, you know, depending on which contractor. There was 2.9, 4.0, 3.0, 1.5. It kind of was all over the board.
So as I mentioned, they varied from 1.5 to 4%.
And that's included. So when I look at $306,000 here for A, adjusted total proposal. That includes the fee, the whatever their fee was, if it was 1.9 or 4, whatever it is.
Yes, it includes the fee that they presented to us for the work. And in this case, the traditional approach is that when they give us the hourly rates for their staff, the hourly rates include the base salary, their benefits, and the the construction management fee.
Okay. So you talked about separating these, and they don't need to go ahead or be concurrent. What's the value in deciding? And you're talking about restrictions on the funding and issues with the funding, Ricardo. Is there a need to decide right now the CM for the gym, or what's the benefit in deciding today versus just talking about Building 23, which seems to be I think on the funding side, certainly less of an issue, right?
Well, that you raise a question. I mean, there is no, the board does not necessarily have to close out today the decision. We were looking at the potential of having these two projects running together under one CM. And that is still up for discussion, with regards to the, to the overall relationship, managing one relationship versus managing two relationships. The funding is critical in this. The board has yet to make a formal decision around the prioritization of the projects. Up until recently, we've been talking about a small gap in time in the launching of the project. We have not spoken, we have discussed, but not decided where do we allocate the funds. So if this is, the board needs to decide, okay, we're gonna prioritize Building 23 as the first project, and then building the large gym. If that's the case, then any funding that comes in, the 400 plus the 197 from the repair, the repair maintenance fund, would be allocated to the to Building 23. These decisions have yet to be made by the board.
I do also want to state that if we do postpone awarding the GMP for the gym, then we would probably have to put it back out, put a new RFP out, because their costs usually only stand for a certain amount of time. Just throwing that out there. And then additionally, I think a benefit of award at this point would be that we could then work through the finalizing the design of the gym, which we have not yet done, and also work on permitting. Those items will take a few months to get completed as well.
Are they lost if we don't have the funding and we can't proceed? Is that money lost, or is that?
Well, it's not lost if, if we're going into the contract with the understanding that the project start is based on the funding achieved, then they understand that we pay them for services rendered, right? So if they're doing pre-construction services for us, we pay them for those services. If the project is put on hold, we have the design, we have everything ready. Sometimes we can even get a permit and sit on that for a certain amount of time, and then once we acquire the funding, then we can release them to put the project out to bid and all of that. So it's not lost unless we decide at some point we've got the design of the gym. Now we're not going to build the gym. We're going to do something else or change the design altogether.
Do you have an estimate of how much you did to get the design and the permits just to do this initial prep?
So we know the pre-construction costs based on, depending on the contractor selected. I think we're still working with the architect to finalize the design costs at this time.
Yes, there's that. And then there is also, so there's the architect cost that we've got a proposal coming in shortly with regards to the work that needs to be done in terms of producing MEPs. And then also we have civil engineering, because we do want to go back to the county. This was a project that was originally designed in late 2017, early 2018. And we do, since there is site work and stormwater management systems that have to be put in place, we do want to go back to the county to revalidate the original approvals they have given and make sure that there is no change in code that would affect the stormwater management system and would affect also the site work. And of course, for permitting purposes, we do have to finish the, when we talk about the pre-construction work and design work that needs to be done, it's mostly related to the HVAC system and where it would be located. The conversations at the time, 2 years ago, were either to locate it on building 23, which would require some structural supports, or putting it on the ground. And depending on the size of the HVAC unit needed, we'd have to make sure that should we put it on the ground, we have the space. The space around building 23 is very, very tight. And so we have to make use of the existing space. I mean, I don't think we can start eating up into the parking lot, because in the back there, we have the student parking lot and we have the facilities parking lot. So there's stuff that needs to be done, and this needs to be done independently of whether we postpone the project or not.
But I don't think I heard a figure, though. So Tiffany, you don't think there is an estimate even at this point for this prep work? I mean, we're not even ballpark. Is it 100,000, 500,000?
I mean, ballpark. Judging by what has been spent with Tetra Tech so far, with the architects so far, maybe we're talking tens of thousands, maybe 40,000 with an engineer, maybe 50,000. I'm not sure about the cost of the civil engineer. I think that was around, I want to say 20,000, Ricardo, is that correct?
I'd have to go back and see what, excuse me, I'm going to do this.
Hey, Ricardo, it's George here.
Yes, George.
The most pressing matter right now is building 23, correct?
Yes.
So, I mean, a lot of these questions on the gym, we've discussed in the past, but we can continue to discuss. The overall goal was to have one construction manager handle both projects either concurrently or after the one was done and we received funding. Now it looks like we have to deal with two construction managers. This may be a dumb question, but for building 23, do we even need a construction manager? Can a GC do it? Do we have time to go through this? Tiffany, Ricardo, anybody?
Well, my hesitancy would be that we don't have a complete set of drawings and designs. So we would put something out to bid to a general contractor. They would give us a cost for what's shown on the drawings. We would ask them to make some assumptions for what's not shown. And then we would find in the back end that we would get change orders because, there was supposed to be something here, but we didn't have, something else shown. And so I fear that would end up costing more. With a construction manager, they'll say, okay, this is your budget. This is what you need done. We're going to figure out how to fill in the blanks. So, you know, that's the one thing where we aren't planning on spending more dollars on design for building 23. Mm-hmm. So it kind of makes more sense to go with a CM. But at this point, if we don't award a contract to somebody this week, then we will not be able to meet the schedule of completing prior to school starting again. Even now where it's kind of iffy.
So George, I think the question is, in my mind, is can we close on a construction manager or, you know, whatever, if we break the project or if we assign it to one, for building 23, we minimize the basis of the effort, even in terms of the construction personnel they proposed, right? To make sure that they're running the project on a more of a bare bones approach, coming closer to what a GC would do, okay? So I think we can emulate a GC structure even in the hiring of a CM. You know, and that's one of the reasons why, you know, we quickly jumped at Elise's invitation and recommendation to have Tiffany join us as our owner's rep to be able to push, you know, push that kind of a mindset on building 23.
Okay.
Ricardo, can you put back up the slide on the costs of building 23?
Yep.
Please.
This one?
Thanks for enlarging it. My eyes are not.
So what we are basically saying is that here we want to go with a CM that is on the low cost side, right? On building 23. For the gym addition, we're saying instead of going with the low cost, we believe that spending an additional $31,000 for the additional value add and supports that they might offer in design work for fundraising, in experience with vendors that have been spec'd for the project, etc. The committee feels that spending that additional $32,000 is a worthwhile investment to be made. If not, the committee, you know, should the board want to go with one CM, I think the committee, and here Tiffany, correct me if I'm wrong, is still comfortable, you know, awarding it to one, you know, on a low cost basis, if we want to say it. Is that a fair statement, Tiffany, in terms of the conversations that we've had?
Yeah, I think
we give up the bells and whistles.
Both vendor A and vendor E are completely competent and will do a good job. Vendor A offers some things that vendor E does not, as far as technology goes, as far as fundraising support goes, as far as experience, which we thought, you know, vendor A is currently working with the vendor that we're going to be using for the gym structure for Nucor. And they've had some challenges in the past that they've overcome. So they have past experience to build on that's going to save us time and money right off the bat, where vendor E is going to have a learning curve with this company and have to, you know, kind of start from scratch with them. So while, you know, we are completely comfortable with either vendor for both projects, you know, that vendor A, the reason that we did say that we think there's value added for vendor A to do the gym is because of these added factors. Now we can do the gym with vendor E, no problem. We can do building 23 with vendor A, no problem. However that works out, there's certain reasons that we picked the way we did. I will say that the one thing that it does concern me is we did not speak to the contract, to any of the contractors, about what if we only award you one of these projects? How does that change your costs? I don't know that it will, but I don't know that it won't. So that may be something that we're up against too. And it shouldn't be a significant increase if there is an increase, but it is something maybe to take into consideration.
Can you expand on that a little bit further, Tiffany? Because it looks like we had them break it out, yeah. You know, and so I would think sort of logically they would assume that there's a chance that we may only award them one.
I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, you know, this isn't their first rodeo, right, Aaron? So I'm sure that they have a certain amount of assumption that if we're asking them to break it out, there is a possibility. We did tell them in the beginning that we are awarding it as two separate contracts, not necessarily to two separate contractors. So, you know, we've laid it out for them that this is not going to be promised, you know, that they're going to get both. Some of the responses we got initially were that they had the projects overlapping, which was a cost savings, of course, because they're managing two projects simultaneously. That's going to be a cost savings no matter how you look at it. I don't have any real reason to say this, except that I've been doing it a long time. And in my experience, contractors will push back when they can. So if there's an opportunity here for them to say, oh, well, you know, you're just going to give me this tiny little project, I thought I was going to get the whole nut. You know, what I gave you was a cost to do everything. So now I need to go back and look at my costs. And I'm not saying that they will, you know, yeah. And it's certainly, if there's an opportunity for future projects, they may not, you know. It's just, I can't really say why, Aaron. It's just that I've seen that happen before.
That's fair. And I guess if it did happen, it would be pre-signing a contract. It would
absolutely.
Be. Okay, got it.
Absolutely, yeah.
Thanks.
Sure.
Hey, Tiffany Elias, quick question. On Contractor A, you said they had a lot of bells and whistles that you didn't have, and you mentioned things like fundraising support. What exactly is fundraising support?
So what this Contractor A has had experience in the past, they have a lot of technology that they can use to provide like cool fly-throughs of, you know, the building digitally, and they have drone footage that they can use. So they can help us with visibility, with marketing, you know, the fundraising opportunity. They also do groundbreaking ceremonies and ribbon cutting ceremonies, all those things that draw the attention that's needed for projects like this. You know, there's plenty of connections that they made in the industry as well. And, you know, they've done work for other charter schools, and they kind of have a lot of experience navigating the waters of needing additional funds and you know, the projects based on whether or not you get the funds.
Stuff like marketing support for the projects, basically. Do they charge for that as part of that? Is that additional costs, or is it kind of rolled into things that they
charge? Yeah, it's rolled into their staffing costs. You know, if we say, hey, we really want you to do this really cool rendering for us, and it takes them a long time, and they may say, okay, well, that's going to be a couple $100, you know. But some of that, they'll have a construction reserve as part of their contract, and whatever is unspent would be a savings of the overall contract. But you could take things like that out of a construction reserve too. But for the most part, their support would be part of their project staffing costs.
Okay, thanks.
Mm-hmm. So coming back to any more questions or comments?
I think getting back to George's point about construction manager versus GC, now that we've kind of split the projects, the only thing that I'm struggling with is the 23 project. Right now, we're realizing some significant cost savings by splitting it, right, and not bundling them together based on the way they're putting the bids in. But I guess the variable in that whole equation is whether or not a GC approach is even more cost effective than a CM approach on 23. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, is it significant? Is it a couple of percentage points? Is it in the noise? Well,
if this, you know, Elias, if this was 2 months ago, I'd say, yeah, we'd probably be able to recognize some savings. We'd have a little more design work to do, so we'd spend a little more money on finishing the design. But, you know, at this point, in order to spend a little more money to finish the design, that's going to take us some time. And then on top of that, then we got to put it out to bid for a general contractor, you know? And so we're out of time, I think. If we went with one of the contractors that we have already received, you know, the CM proposals from, we may be able to negotiate with them, you know, what would it cost to go general contractor on this versus a CMGMP, you know, go lump sum versus guaranteed maximum price contract. But, you know, again, that we would have to carry a hefty contingency ourselves so that we could cover any of those unknowns. I think it would be entirely too risky to take the design as it is and put it and turn that into a GC build.
Is the, when you say guaranteed maximum price, are the CMs operating under that context? And how are we coming to the determination of what a guaranteed maximum price is?
So, we have an estimate for the cost of the work currently. That would define our budget. That's how we would decide what our budget is. If our estimate is $400,000, we'll say, okay, we want a little bit of a contingency just for the unknowns, or the last minute's, hey, I really want to do this. And then we determine that, you know, let's say, for instance, our budget is $420,000. And then, you know, when we take the CM on board, they'll put the project out to bid. When the bids come in from the subcontracting community, if we're not within budget, then, you know, we have to reassess the situation there. The guaranteed maximum price means that, you know, they're going to build this building for that amount of money, or they're going to do this project for that amount of money, based on what they've seen with the drawings so far. But they won't be able to determine that cost until they have the bids back from the general or from the subcontracting community. So that the guaranteed maximum price gets decided after the bids come in. However, we have a pretty good idea of what that's going to be based on estimating that's done during pre-construction.
Thanks. Any other questions for
Tiffany? So just one more thought, if I may add it, if we're in terms of thinking about the potential cost savings that you were talking, going the GC route and so on, then the alternative that might allow us to focus on that would be to concentrate everything on vendor E. And so there's $30,000 of premium that we avoid paying in going with one CM, and that can then be allocated to some of the bells and whistles to support, you know, the fundraising or other activities that we might choose to engage in, you know, in advancing the large gym. You see, so these are sort of the trade-offs that we were trying to quantify. I think the group in and of itself came to the conclusion that a premium of $70,000 was excessive. But a premium of $31,000 was worth the investment in terms of the delta. Now, that can change, and that's why we brought a recommendation but wanted to engage in this discussion, because the cost pressures of where we are today with the state reality, with the budgeting constraints, and with our timelines may want a decision to drive us primarily on cost and give up on some of the bells and whistles.
I don't see CM as kind of bells and whistles versus a GC route. I mean, I see CM as ensuring that the project is done to the specs and no changes and no surprises, which is particularly important since we have a time crunch. We want to have that building done. At least that to me seems to be that was the prevailing thought at the last board meeting and the board meeting before that. to have Building 23 complete before the beginning of the school year, whatever that may look like with social distancing or not. But I'll tell you, with social distancing, it's that much more important that that building has additional space. I'm not comfortable pivoting away from a CM even just for Building 23, because I think that that gives us the guardrails and ensures that the process is timely. I think that's money well spent, even if it is an incremental cost increase.
I agree completely.
Yeah, I think if we were going to go the other route, I would want to see much more detailed planning around how we would execute and the time frame that we have successfully. I feel like it is not a massive amount of money to pay for this. I think it seems worth it. It seems like the price to pay to ensure that we have a quality product in a timely fashion. To your point, Tiffany, it's not 2 months ago, it's now. And we're kind of under the gun as it is. And I just don't feel like, I don't think I have enough detail, and we don't have enough time to take another 2 or 3 weeks to get to that detail to feel comfortable going a different route than a CM at this point.
I agree.
So what I am hearing here, just to summarize, Elias, sorry to interrupt you. Number one, as we get project funding or asks, you know, we've got the 197 that should be hitting our books in the next few days. We have an opportunity to come off of formal review and go back to the investors with an ask for 400,000, hopefully in the next 30 days. Those funds directionally, or at least the 400,000, directionally what I'm hearing is that the board supports allocation of those funds to Building 23, and that we are de facto prioritizing Building 23 and then subsequently the large gym.
I don't know if the board has said that it supports allocating the 400K from the investors to 23. It does support allocating it to construction. But that's a conversation that we do need to have, and we do need to take a close look at the numbers. And because we don't have the final budgets from the state yet, it's hard for us to say how we want to move that money or where we want to push it, because if we do have some issues with the budget, then there's going to be issues with the gym construction as well.
Well, remember that the $400,000 cannot be used in operations. The $400,000 was donated by Longwood as part of their 1.44 capital expenditures.
Yeah, we're aware of that. We're just saying where we put that money towards. Do we put it towards initiation of the gym, or do we put it all into 23 at this point? So it depends on where we are with cash reserves.
Well, that has to be defined, because if we don't define that today, it means that we can't have a discussion around launching Building 23 in mid-June or soon thereafter.
Elias, do you want to take a prioritization vote from the board to see what the board's feeling on that is?
I'm not understanding Ricardo's point about the money and 23 absent the $400,000.
Well, I I'm leveraging the messaging that I think most of us have heard in different meetings and engagements, that, you know, if we don't feel that we have most of the money for a project, we shouldn't be starting a project that may end up depending on sourcing funds out of our future operating budget. Okay? And so if we want to start Building 23 by mid-June, we need to try and obtain $400,000 in the piggy bank as quickly as possible to dedicate to that project. If the board decides that that $400,000 is going to go to the large gym as part of the funding, let's say 1.3 that is necessary to complete the first phase, we don't have funding for Building 23. And so June 15th becomes a moot point.
No, so explain to me, we don't get the 400,000 because that's not a guarantee.
Exactly.
We don't get the 400,000 from the investors. You need to explain why we cannot start building 23 construction by June, absent the $400,000, and what that does to the bottom line of the budget. That's what we're asking, because there's no guarantee that we're going to get that money.
Well, right now, as we know, the current version of the budget does not include any construction.
Elias, I agree with Ricardo. The understanding was we get off formal probation and we seek investor approval for the release of 400.
There's a difference between understanding and having some initial conversations about that and a guarantee. We have no guarantees. And so if the current budget doesn't show costs or hasn't budgeted for the gym, then you need to put that into the budget and explain to us what the impact of putting the construction of 23 into the current budget without the $400,000 from the investors. That's what we're asking. If we don't have that money, it's not that it's a moot point. Where does that drive us financially? Where does that push the bottom line? Where does that change our debt to equity ratios and the things that the investors are looking at, so that we can understand and make an educated decision, an informed decision about proceeding with that absent the $400,000 from the investors? Because if we don't know that, then we're not clear on the money that needs to be spent. We can make a decision and say, yes, spend the money, but we don't have the $400,000 in hand, and we don't have a guarantee that we're going to get that money. We've had conversations that they say, sure, we'll think about it and we'll talk about it, but nobody said to us, we're going to cut you a check for $400,000 before the end of June. So we don't know that. We need to run those numbers through the budget without the $400,000, and we need to understand the overall impact. That's what I'm saying, and we need that, and that's how we can make a decision that is informed on this.
So help me understand the additional information, right? Because there is a current version of the budget. If we add, and what I think I hear you say, Elias, is if we were to fund $1.3 million out of our current operating budget.
I think he's just talking.
That's not what I'm saying.
Building 23, Ricardo. Just building 23.
Okay. So if we add $400,000 in our current operating budget.
No, we're not adding any money. We're adding no money to the budget. What's the impact if we start the 23 project?
We're not
I think what he's saying.
I think you are asking maybe, to add the cost. You're asking for a stress test of what happens if we do 23 and we don't get the investor money released. Is that
correct?
That's the expense,
not the revenue. Yeah.
So, and that's exactly what I was alluding to. If we put 400,000 through the current operating budget, having to fund it exclusively from operations, that 400,000 is going to impact, 400,000 is going to impact it's going to reduce our days of cash on hand by about 6 days. And it's already, at half of what it's supposed to be at the end of the year, based on where we are today. That 400,000 is going to impact our debt coverage ratio by 0.13, and it's already under 1 right now. It's at 0.98, I think. And so it would drop to about 0.85. And we have to be at 1.10. So
what's your degree of confidence that we'll get this 400K released even after the probation comes off, given that our DTI is lower than it's supposed to be?
I think that historically, if we look back, if we look back at where we start each year in terms of our preliminary budgets, historically, in our preliminary budgets, we are at or above debt coverage ratio. And, you know, my sense is that with Karen and the work that she has been doing, and I think she, you know, she's met with the board budget committee once and has been working with the staff, that number is trending up from the 0.98. So that, in my sense, is going to go north of 1.1 in terms of debt coverage ratio. Because as she presented at the last board meeting, our ending cash is headed up. Okay. And so the starting point for that calculation is going to also, to some extent improve. Our days of cash on hand is improving, but we need to have $4.3 million of cash on hand in bottom line cash if we want to hit the 60 days. And we know that that has always been the soft point, but the investors understand that the funding formula in Delaware gives us the breathing room that they don't see in other states. And so they've been generous with us with regards to that. But yes, I cannot categorically say that we're going to skim right through, not knowing where we are with the state funding. And so part of a conversation behind the scenes, one option is to say, unfortunately, given the uncertainties, we have to push everything back by 1 year. And we live for 12 months in the current facilities that we have. That is also an option.
I don't know enough about Building 23 to understand the impact of construction during the school year. Is it that we push back by a year, or is it how impactful is it if, let's say, they didn't release the $400K, we were not in a great financial situation, and we needed to wait until we received state funding and had a better sense of the budget? Is it something where we could start it in August and finish in November without being hugely impactful? Or I just don't know.
And the answer to that question, Erin, we have had those conversations, and John is very confident that given the nature of the work that needs to be done, if we do all the demolishing and, you know, all the really noisy work in the latter part of the summer, and then we do the finishing, all the electrical and, the finishing phase during the school year, that space is blocked out enough, and there is a stairwell that takes us out the back, so that that second floor has independent access, and we would not have to access the second floor through the parts of the building that are being currently used as a school. So we feel confident that if we start it, we can finish it during the school year with, minor impact on the daily routines of the school.
Okay, but you wouldn't start in September or October, right?
No, ideally, the demolition part, which is the
not ideally. I know, but you wouldn't do demolition in the middle of a school year, right?
We would prefer not to do it. Absolutely. Yeah.
Now there's the other scenario where school, we can't really go back to school and the building is just empty in September, October, when we have better understanding of the funding, what happened, and we have much better visibility into the budget next year, right? And now you can do construction because there's nobody in the building.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. And as I mentioned at the beginning, there is the scenario that would push back the June 15th as the state, as the governor and the working groups that have been launched at the policy level and at the implementation level wrestle with what does a reopening in the fall look like. So yes, you're absolutely correct.
So it sounds like there are a few possible paths, right? One path is the 400K gets released and we use it for this. Mm-hmm. Path two is the 400K gets released and we use it for something else. Path three is the 400K is not released. And I guess that leaves us with a choice of either kind of going forward, understanding it's going to ding our DTI and our cash on hand, or delaying, or path number four is it doesn't get released and we delay the start. Am I missing any options there?
Well, maybe the underlying in all of these is the overall budget, not just the 400K, but all the other source of revenues, right? It's still up in the air. I think we don't know what's happening, right? And what's going to happen given COVID-19. Is that a fair statement, Ricardo? I mean, whatever preliminary budget we have right now is can swing or is not as firm as in previous years.
Oh, it is absolutely soft right now. I think the last time we had as soft a budget as this one was in 2008, 2009, when we had the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
And the state took cuts.
So to me, that's what gives them more hesitant. You know, it's not just necessarily the 400, for sure the 400K helps, but so what if you get the 400K, but you're short now by a couple million dollars because the state is not going to fund the, whatever reason, right?
Mm-hmm.
And throws the whole budget into it. So it seems like that to me is a bigger underlying issue there.
Yes, with the one caveat that 400K, we would have to go, if we wanted to repurpose it for capital expenditures in the facilities area so that the facilities budget could be restructured and free up funds, operating funds for other uses, we would have to get the blessing from A, the investors, and B, Longwood for that repurposing of funds.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's suggesting repurposing that money. We're looking to use it for construction, just specifically what construction. The challenge is that we're in a situation now where even to get our numbers in a reasonable place, we need to borrow from the maintenance fund. We need to get money from the investors just to get our money up to where it should be. And that's an unfortunate position to be in. And that's driven a lot by the fact that we haven't been able to fundraise over time. And I'm sure the environment coming up with COVID and loss of jobs and loss of money is going to be a very difficult environment with which to even try to fundraise. We heard a lot of things are drying up in a lot of areas right now from the fundraising side. So we are in a tough situation financially, but we have needs for the school that need to be met. And there's growth for the school. There are other things that we really need to be thinking about. And so the question is, how bad is it going to be if we do the 23 construction without bringing the 400K into play? I guess that's the question. And the briefing doesn't tell us any of that. So we don't know where we are now projected and where these additional costs, let's say it's 350 to 400 for Building 23, where that drives our bottom line, or the range of where we drive our bottom line.
For the previous part of the Longwood money that was, I think you said there was 1.4 and there's 400K left for the million that was released previously.
Mm-hmm.
How quickly did that happen between conversation with the investors, and how quickly were the funds made available?
Within 30 days. On the outside, because the investors go to Zions Bank as the trustee and authorize them to release the funds, and these funds are either checked to us or wire transferred. The repair funds, the maintenance reserve funds are being wire transferred to us. So,
but how quickly would we have an answer from them as to whether or not they would give us the money? How quickly is that usually turn around?
Well, we do not have a scheduled call with them. They were waiting for us to come off of formal review at the end of June. And so the timeline that we had discussed with them was a check-in call in early July.
But I think we can get a call scheduled. I guess the question is, what's the process? So we have this call. Is it a verbal conversation and then they take it back? Is it like a formal package we have to submit, or how does that part work?
Usually it's been a conversation. In this environment, they may ask for, you know, they will in all likelihood ask for, what does our next budget look like?
Okay.
So we could push up this phone call with them and try to escalate that timeline, so we would have a better understanding of whether or not we would have the funds.
Yes.
And then in the meantime, hopefully we get a better understanding too with the Department of Education, whether or not, you know, what their funding is going to look like.
When you say their funding, you're talking about the investors, Anna Maria?
No, the budgetary, the budgetary constraints of the... Mm-hmm, Am I understanding that correctly?
Yes.
Ricardo.
Yes, George.
What do you want to do? What's your suggestion?
Well, my recommendation is that, you know, we do prioritize Building 23.
Agree.
If it be started now or it be started later, you know, that we do prioritize Building 23. And for me, the driver is that we do have a chance of, if we can complete Building 23 in a timely manner, that during, you know, August, September, before we go to unit count on September 30, that we can put in more, you know, we can fill more seats, let me put it like that, in ninth grade. And it gives us bandwidth for that incremental revenue. I would also recommend strongly, and Elias and I had a preliminary conversation, that with the repayment to the state being completed, that we could anticipate, as Anna Maria was indicating, a call with the investors to sound them out exactly what they need from us to be able to make the decision of the $400,000, okay? Because then we know exactly what they want. Now, do they want to see an approved budget? What does that look like? You know, or are they willing to work with us, understanding that this $400,000 will fund that project independently of the operating budget? You know, they've supported the project. The project also not only benefits Building 23, as we all know, it does impact and make available classrooms in Building 22. And in Building 21, you know, and from a pedagogical side, it does also have the benefit that we reclaim a lot of transit time that currently happens between Building 21 and 23. And so there is a pedagogical benefit, but to that I'd have to defer to Ashley. Stephanie in terms of the impact on that. Building 20.
And I agree with all that, so... I mean, we can stay on the phone all night discussing this, but we need to move forward.
Yes. So,
one question, Ricardo. In terms of revenues from the government, from the state, what are the key miles? You mentioned, September, end of September, when you get final confirmation. But between now and then, what are the key dates or milestones where you get further confirmation of what your revenue budgets will be from the state?
Usually it happens we start getting preliminary confirmation, you know, with the budgeting process, that the state budgeting process, it firms up in the month of June. And then, in the wee hours of July 1st, it gets locked in. And then the first 15 days of July, we know pretty much the funding, you know, the funding that we will be getting. Be it from the state and also from the districts. You know, we will have solid information to be able to make those, you know, those projections. With regards to enrollment, the state uses our May 1st unit count, and the May 1st unit count came in at 1,935, if I recall correctly, or 1,937 students. This year, for this current year, our unit count came out at 1,915. The budget that Karen has been working on right now is based on 1937. I think the and that is the basis for the funding. If we look at eSchool right now, I believe that number in terms of enrollment is actually a little bit higher than the 1935. But that the definitive number, Rodrigo, is which the state then adjusts up or down the funding they give us, is the September 30 unit count.
Right. But it seems like July, mid-July is when you have a firmer view of what the revenues are going to be, in particular, mm-hmm. given COVID-19 and what the state may do with the rates and whatnot, given COVID-19.
If I could interject, we don't always know the local by July 15th. This is Karen. It can be later than that before the Department of Education certifies the local per pupil funding. Ricardo outlined the state, but we do not always have that local number. And this year, that number is just as important as the state number, because our revenue from the local side is based on what the districts spend, not what they earn. And if they are experiencing the kind of savings in utilities and various items that Odyssey is, you could have a drop in local revenue. I say could. I don't have a crystal ball.
When do you get more firmer confirmation on that end? I mean, if the state is mid-July, the local funds, what's the timing on that? Go ahead.
I'm looking right now to see when we got it last year.
And Rodrigo, I would add an additional dimension of complexity to this, which is over the summer, the state and the governor are going to define what reopening is going to look like. And so we may find ourselves in a scenario, and this is hypothetical, where funding is dried up, but reopening may have a considerably higher level of costs because it's a modified reopening with social mm-hmm. distancing.
Ricardo, can I just ask, I just want to make sure I don't know if I caught it. So is your recommendation to move forward with 23 now, you know, understanding that there's a likelihood of 400 getting released and other factors, or is your recommendation that we wait until we have a, you know, additional clarity from a budget perspective, or pause for a year? Like what are you recommending? Because I think you've been the closest to this out of all of us. Mm-hmm. And so I would love to understand your kind of professional opinion on this.
Given where we are today, and given the overall uncertainties and not knowing whether we are going to get some relief from the investors in terms of bond covenants. I mean, everybody is getting relief all over the place, right? Banks are giving relief to property owners, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, on mortgages and so on. But assuming we don't get any relief, then I think we need to, yes, continue prioritizing Building 23 as the first step. But I would delay the launch of Building 23 until we have greater clarity with regards to what reopening looks like and what our operating budget looks like to be able to have a very robust conversation with the investors. I mean, we've been, you know, going back and forth with the investors. The last couple of meetings, they've smoke signaled that should we come off probation and all of that, they're willing to come to the table in support of the school. Now, you know, now that we're very, very close to finalizing everything with the DOE, I really think that we can quickly get clarity from them about the parameters with which they will commit to releasing the 400,000. And if we get that, that then becomes in mid-July, once we have the information from the state and see what the operating bottom line is, then we can launch Building 23 and get the demolition phase and the clean out phase all taken care of, which is the really messy thing. And then during the school year, the first couple of months of the school year, finish Building 23.
So, question.
Go ahead.
Just a quick question. So if we are pushing back a couple months, will we have to get new proposals? Is that what Tiffany said earlier?
Tiffany?
I'm sorry, can you say that again?
So if we postpone the whole decision-making until we have the clarity of the money released by the investors, will the numbers we saw today are not going to be valid anymore? Will we have to start the process again and get new proposals?
You know, so it depends on how we do this. If we decide that we're going to go with, for instance, contractor E, and we negotiate this with them, we can ask them to hold their costs until August or, you know, whenever. But we would have to have that conversation now and probably take some preemptive steps to get a contract in place. If we say, all right, listen, guys, we're not ready to make an award until probably the end of the summer or whenever that is, we can ask them how long their numbers will be good for. Sometimes they'll hold them for 60 or 90 days. Right now, I would be nervous to not award a contract and get a commitment on costs, even if we're going to be starting later, because we don't know. We haven't yet seen the effects of COVID-19 on the construction industry. We've got a lot of hungry contractors right now because the work isn't really there. A lot of projects have stopped. My concern is a lot of projects will be, either taking advantage of that stop or, you know, they'll be stopping as well. And then the industry is going to go a little bit bonkers. You know, prices could go way up. They could go way down. We really don't know. We've been trying kind of keeping a close eye on costs. And right now they're pretty steady, but we really feel this. The construction industry really feels these sorts of recessions months after the rest of the economy does. So that would be our risk here. If we don't lock in some costs now, the risk could be that in 3 months even, we could see some prices going up due to COVID-19. So I don't know. I hope that answers the question.
So are you recommending Tiffany make a decision tonight contingent to the release of the funds?
Maybe we make a decision on contractor and we delay payment terms, or we say that we'll define the start date when we're ready, but they at least know that they have the gig.
Okay. Right, Erin. Yeah.
That sounds good.
I'm agreeable with that.
If it's okay, I would just like to, I just saw Ashley pop up. I just wanted to get a sense from her, from a mission-based perspective. Ashley, I think you've heard the conversations. Are you, given where enrollment is right now for the high school, if we were to push back by 6 months, the 10 classrooms, would you be able to accommodate the project, the enrollment that you and, are seeing materializing for the high school?
We'll make it work. Essentially, we won't be able to obviously move any of the classrooms out of Building 21, which then also impacts Building 22 and the Greek classrooms that they're looking to put in there. But we would certainly be able to make it work. We're not planning on hiring additional teachers at this point, so we'll figure out a way to make it work.
Okay. So thank you. I just want, and
Thanks, Ricardo. I think what we're hearing here basically is that there's a lot of risk associated with this, and the risk is associated with whether or not we get additional dollars, and if we don't get those dollars, we might be in some financial trouble, depending on where the budget lands. But what I'm hearing, too, is that we could potentially go forward with approving a CM if we wanted to, but not necessarily we could slow play the major construction. So in other words, if we don't get the funding, we tell the CM, they need to understand that we may not start heavy construction until a slightly later date. And so they would have to wait a little bit to get into that part. And that reduces risk for us financially and allows us to see exactly where the money is going to land within the next 60 days, for example, 30 to 60 days, and gives us better clarity and allows us to make some decisions. So if I understand correctly, if we do decide on a CM, we don't necessarily need to fully fund the execution of that project over some defined period of time. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Yes, you know, that's fine. Yes.
We certainly can take advantage of some of that downtime by working with the design team to finalize drawings and such. But, you know, we can negotiate the terms of the contract with the CM that we award the contract to and indicate that we are not looking at a construction start of June as we originally thought, that based on, you know, the current situation with the budget, the unknowns in the budget, we're going to have to delay that start until, you know, whatever that date is that we're anticipating it to be. And that can all be clearly put into the contract verbiage as well.
Okay. So I recommend we put a motion on the floor. Does anybody have a motion?
I'll make a motion that we select, what is it, CME? Is that right, Tiffany? Nod if that's right. Okay, yeah. CME for Building 23, and that we delay designating a start date at this time.
I second that motion.
Do we have any discussion on that motion? All right, if not, we'll call for a vote. All those in favor of selecting vendor E as a construction manager?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay, so motion, any abstaining? Okay, so the motion passes unanimously. We'll go ahead with vendor E. Who is vendor E, I guess?
And before we do that, just the question is basically by voting in this direction, we are postponing the decision on the contract manager for the large gym, or was this already thinking that vendor E would also then pick up the large gym? I just asking for clarity.
Yeah, no, I don't think there's been a vote on E. I think my sense is that there's some stress on E, and that we would probably, not E, on the gym, but that we wait maybe until the June board meeting to have a discussion on the gym project. Maybe we'll have a little more clarity at that point on a number of things. Because we wouldn't be planning to start that anyways at this point. Mm-hmm. And there's enough of a financial stress with the 23 that's probably more than enough to manage financially right now. So I say we stick with the 23 start, and then we put a pin in the large gym project for either the next board meeting or the fall or following that. Does anybody have any objections to that approach?
Not at all. And let's, for the next discussion, if we do have a discussion in June for the gym, let's have a clarity on budget implication.
Okay.
Things like number of days of cash on hand, the debt to service ratios, all those things, and where we are, what the impact would be with starting those.
Yeah, when I say budget, I mean covenants. I mean right. Specifically yes. Covenants as well.
Yeah. Yeah, just this was very good. That's fine. We can talk in June, but if I understood, it won't be by until July that we'll start getting a better firmer, you know, view of the budget next year. So whatever hesitations we had here, at least me personally have here today, I don't think we'll know in June. We'll still have them in June. So maybe consider talking about that in July, when I think it'll be, we'll have firmer ground on the operating budget for next year. That's one consideration.
But I think with getting the construction manager, thanks, Rodrigo, that we will be able to go out, secure bids for the various phases of 23 and have a very clear understanding of the costs associated with that. And when we, I guess, what we could start doing based on the budget, because we will have more clarity over the next few weeks.
As long as we're clear how much that's going to cost, you know, if it's going to cost another $300,000 or $400,000, right, that would be an issue. But if it's maybe $30,000 or $40,000 to get that done, so, because I don't think that was clear today. I mean, I heard $30,000, $40,000. So maybe let's get that, you know, worked out a little bit, so we know exactly how much, if we are to proceed, how much we're going to commit by June, right, to get that prep work done.
And you're talking about the pre-construction cost for the large gym, right, Rodrigo?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, we can definitely have all of that buttoned up.
As I said,
we've asked for proposals from the architect, and we've asked for a proposal from the civil engineer, and we can button all of that up into, you know, all these related costs.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Sounds good. So 23 CM is a go. Jim is, we're pausing on that until we have a little bit more information on the budget and see what the implications of starting that would be, either if it's next board meeting or the board meeting after that. We'll work that. So we'll keep this in the back burner until we know more budget wise. Do we have any other topics that we need to discuss right now on the list?
I just want to answer the question that I think, Elise, you asked who he is. Somebody asked who.
Elias asked who is he? Who did we award it to?
Who we awarded it to? We awarded it to Commonwealth.
Okay, good.
Okay. Thank you. Well, thanks, Ricardo and Tiffany and the whole team for helping us work through that, and all the time and effort you guys put into it. We really appreciate it. Mike Russos and Tim Skibicki and all the folks on the team, and Karen and John and everybody. Thanks for all that. Thanks for all your help on this. At 7:50, did we have anything else we wanted to put on the for discussion tonight? I know this is focused on construction. I don't think we had anything major on the table, although we were having conversations about a biodome. Do we want to have a conversation about that?
I can do it as a written update to the board, and we can discuss it at the June meeting. I can, in the interest of time, I'm happy to run through some of the high points on that. What I will tell you about the biodome is the beginning. It's a project that's going to take a while in terms of funding, because it's going to have zero impact on school budget. Obviously, money for this project is not going to come from school budget. It's going to be all raised via grants and kind donations and fundraising efforts. It's about a $50,000 to $60,000 project. It is both a STEM lab for K-12, as well as an outdoor classroom. It's incredibly innovative. I will circulate the pictures of it. It's designed as an energy efficient technology. It gives our kids hands-on learning opportunity, again, K-12. It gives terrific new space as a classroom. I'll put that to paper. Melissa Tracy, who's spearheading that project, this is going to be the project run by the Green Team with the assistance of the board's fundraising and grant writing committee. A lot of work has been done in terms of kind of just budget, helping us with budget, by Ricardo and John Stewart. It's going to need some infrastructure support, such as access to water, but otherwise it's fully self-sustainable, self-sufficient. The first grant piece, the first funding piece for that is the DuPont grant. Rodrigo and I spoke briefly about it. It actually was brought to us as an opportunity by another parent who is a DuPont employee. That grant is due on June 1st. It's the first piece. It's a $10,000 grant. You know, we don't know if we're going to be successful on that. Obviously, every time we apply for a grant, we hope we're going to be successful. But if we do get that, it'll then pave the work for seeking matching funds from other local companies, national companies, and other larger grant underwriters. That's really it. I'll put highlights on what it is, what the impact on the school and the curriculum and the campuses, so that everybody on the board can have better clarity as to what this project entails. And I'll get that out to you within the next few days. And once we have a draft of the grant, it'll have some highlights. I think everything I'll circulate to you will probably have some pieces of that. I will connect with Ricardo and John, because they've been helpful on drafting the budget side of it, to share the draft with them before we submit it. That's all I got. Elias, you're on mute.
I want to check if there are any comments or new business from anybody that we needed to address before we closed out.
Does the dome require a board vote, since it's a large amount?
It's not an amount. It's not the amount of money that impacts school budget. That's why all of it is contingent on us being able to raise that money. Where we do need board involvement is because it implicates campus and space and campus operations. Yes, the board needs to be involved and ultimately bless the dome. But first thing is to our ability to raise the money.
Elise?
Yes.
Supposedly, you're successful, or Melissa is successful with a grant from DuPont. What does that commit us to?
At that juncture, it's an initiation. Within our grant, we say that this project is contingent on raising further funds. DuPont grant is only a $10,000 grant, even though we try to seek higher amount. But
so supposedly, it's not to go through with that. What happens to the $10,000?
We would either be able to, they would have to agree for us to use it for other purposes, or we would have to return it.
Yeah, I think we need to have a discussion on this.
Please, yeah, so you'll provide us with more information at the next meeting then, so we can be more fully aware of what's going on.
Sure.
Okay.
Elise, it's Kaya. Do you mind if I ask a question?
Please.
So with this fundraising, is the fundraising going to be done at the school level, or is the fundraising going to be fully done through grants?
We'll probably anticipate a little bit of both. The large pieces of it, we're hoping to have grant underwriting because of a specific green environmental approach to it.
Yeah, not that I want to shut anybody down. I appreciate the questions, but we're not really taking questions from the folks right now. I know that there's a lot of questions that the board has about the biodome. Most of the folks on the board don't know anything about the biodome or know very little about it. And so we need to look into it. Like Elise said, there are implications campus-wide and with respect to strategic thinking and planning about something like that, a major project like that. So we just need to fully understand everything about it and its implications to the school and to the facilities and to the infrastructure and everything else like that. So there will have to be a board vote on it, even if irrespective of what happens, I think, based on the size and scale of the project. All right, so we'll take that up at another meeting. Any other new business comments, thoughts, questions for anybody? All right, well, thank you very much to the construction team. Thanks for all your help and support. And we look forward to hearing what Commonwealth brings forward to us with respect to bids and costs of this project going forward.
Well, thank you for your support. And we will keep on moving.
I move to adjourn.
Do we have a second?
I'll second.
All in favor?
Aye. They don't love talking to you all, but you know.
It's 7:56.
All right.
Everyone.
Thank you.
Good night, everybody.
Take care. Good night. Thank you all for dialing in.